This week's episode is sponsored by Spaces. Spaces is a new platform backed by 15 plus years of educator feedback designed to document the process and progress behind student learning in your classroom. Join the Spaces community to connect with educators across North America and gain access to free teacher-created resources, help educators who are just starting out on their journey, and learn new things from teachers who have been there before. So visit community.spacesedu.com today.
Is this the teacher hotline?
Hello, everyone. Welcome back again to another episode of the Teacher Hotline. My name is Ronald Hay, where we try to answer some of the most pressing questions for teachers in and outside of the classroom. Today, we have Alicia from the Hamilton-Wentworth School Board. Alicia, what can we do for you today?
Hey, Ron. I've been teaching grade 12 law for 10 years. The students that generally take this elective are students who want to pursue this career path. I try to make this course fun with engaging assignments and field trips. However, I was never a lawyer in a former life, and I'll be honest, I'm a bit out of touch with what it's actually like to work at a law firm. Wondering if you have anyone working in industry who can shed some light on the good, the bad, and the ugly truths of working as a lawyer. I would love to provide more transparency to my students and not just paint the profession with rose-tinted glasses. I would also love to also hear what kind of skills they think we should begin developing in our students at high school to better prepare them for a career in law. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Alicia. I am so glad that you asked that question. I think this would benefit not just other teachers, but students who listen to this podcast and thinking about pursuing a career in law. So today, I'm introducing a new segment in the show called I Wish I Knew. Unfortunately, we are forced to begin choosing career paths at an early age, and media, family, and friends can also paint an inaccurate depiction of certain careers. So on this segment, I want to bring in seasoned professionals to talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly truths of their profession to educate teachers and students to better prepare them for the future that lies ahead. We'll also talk to these professionals about what real-world skills students need to develop and focus in on in the classroom to better prepare them for these jobs. So on the first episode of this segment, today I want to bring in an old friend, Aaron Baer, co-founder of 4L Academy, an organization that provides modern training for lawyers and law students. Aaron has a wealth of industry experience. He spent almost 7 years working at Aird & Bryliss law firm as a corporate lawyer before working his way up, becoming a partner at the firm. Aaron got his dual business and law degree from Western University and the Ivy Business School. And fun fact, Aaron and I actually lived in the same residence at Western, Essex Hall, back in 2007, and that is how we met. Aaron, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thanks so much for having me, Ron. Pleasure to be here. And I can't believe that was 2007. That's 15 years ago.
Oh, holy moly. I never would have saw that coming 15 years ago. And here we are running a podcast right now. Aaron, I got so many questions for you. My first question for you is, did you ever know that you want to become a lawyer back in, heck, in high school?
Yeah, not fully, to be honest. So I went to a small school. It was a private school, similar to one you teach at. And it was really math and science heavy. So there were not many people, if any, you know, role models who were going into law. I remember at the time, grade 12 biology was an elective, but it was sort of an understanding that you took that course. And my brother and I've got a twin brother. We both said, like, I don't want to take this. Like, I'm much more interested in other things. So I knew I didn't want to do that sort of stuff. Always liked arguing or been, I guess, argumentative, debating kind of person. And so, you know, I think those are traits that people sometimes think, oh, you'll make a good lawyer. And I don't think that's necessarily true. And we'll talk more about that. But I had a slight inkling. The school I went to didn't have any business courses, which was a shame. And so when I applied to university, I wanted to do business, but I had no exposure to that and barely any exposure at all to law. Went to business school. That's where we met. So did 2 years of my undergrad at Western in business. Did my first year of business school at Ivy. And there was a dual degree program there that had always been appealing to me. And I remember going through the recruiting process in business school and going, I'm not sure I want to do any of these things. So I had kept that option open. I'd written my LSAT. and decided to do the dual degree program. So law was always something, you know, theoretically, but I certainly didn't know for sure in high school that I wanted to be a lawyer.
Yeah, so because law is actually an elective course in high school, which I should mention is not even offered at all schools. So was law even offered as a grade 11 or 12 course at your high school?
Yeah, it was. I think we had two of them. So there was a grade 11 course, which I actually didn't take. That was probably the more interesting one. And I can't remember, to be honest, why I didn't take it. You know, clearly I was not set on being a lawyer. Now that I say that, I took the grade 12 one. And at least the school I went to, that one was more like a public international law, like talking about the UN and all sorts of stuff that, quite frankly, in hindsight, I have way less interest in. And I think, you know, these courses are meant to introduce things at a high level, but that's not what being a lawyer is like. It's not usually what going to law school is like. And so, you know, if you think you're interested in being a lawyer, and we'll talk more about what that looks like in reality, and you're finding some of your high school law classes not that interesting, you know, that doesn't mean you won't make a good lawyer or won't find law school interesting. I think they're quite different, and the way they're taught is quite different. Usually law classes are pretty lecture-based, and you don't go too in-depth because rarely in high school do you have someone who's been to law school or is a lawyer who's teaching them. It's often somebody who has taken a law course or two in university, if you're lucky. So it's a whole different ballgame.
Now, if you remember back in high school, I feel like a lot of students, including myself, you pursue subjects that people either persuade you to go into, or you're influenced by media or heavily your parents. A lot of times, if your mom and dad's a lawyer, you might even think about becoming a lawyer. Like for me, for instance, I remember when I was in high school, I remember I wanted to become a criminologist, but I don't even know what that really means now. But I remember I wanted to get into that field because that was the hot topic, because CSI was a big show back in the day. And I know Suits is a really popular Netflix show. And I know when I ever talk to students that are interested in going to law, they always reference that show. So for all the teachers and the students that are listening, how accurate, first off, I'm gonna have to ask, number one, have you seen that show? And number two, if you have, how accurate of a depiction is that show to reality of what it is to be actually at a law firm?
I think the most accurate depiction may be how Meghan Markle felt after after getting married. That might be the most accurate depiction of being a lawyer for the average lawyer. I would say Suits is, I've definitely seen Suits. I watched the first few seasons and then gave up on it. Suits is pretty unrealistic. You know, all the work seems really interesting. Everyone's really attractive. They're doing 500 different types of law in the same episode. None of that is overly realistic, I would say. You know, most lawyers, you know, you go to law school, you learn some pretty broad stuff. And a lot of people have no idea what kind of law they want to do when they go into law school. Or whatever they thought they might do is not always where they end up. And that could be just where the jobs are. Or you start learning more about different areas of law and going, you know what, this isn't for me. So I remember in first year law school, I thought, oh, like maybe I'll be a family lawyer. Like I can help people solve problems. I'm pretty empathetic, like, you know, problem solving. And then I remember going to a workshop early in my first year and hearing from real family lawyers talking about how really what you're dealing with is people being irrational, hating each other and fighting over who gets the kid on Christmas. And you'd think alternating years would be a simple answer, but often that's too much to ask for. And I want them every single Christmas. And there's real things that like that kind of stuff going on. So as a corporate lawyer and definitely not a family lawyer, you know, you're dealing with a lot of paperwork. You're dealing with contracts. You're dealing with high levels of documents, and Suits glosses over the actual legal work. You know, you see the fun part. You're in court. You're at a meeting where you're negotiating, you're strategizing, all that stuff. But the reality is behind the scenes, there's a lot of work being done. And so if Suits is accurate at all, I think it shows you what being a lawyer is like to some extent as you're much higher up the chain, you know, more of a senior partner who's dealing with high level things and is not in the weeds. But the reality is for most lawyers in their early years as lawyers, you're dealing with a lot of, you know, a lot of work, a lot of documents, a lot of reviewing things, figuring things out, and a whole lot less the part that sounds way more attractive, which people think of as negotiating, being in court, all that stuff. Like most court, most litigation cases, for example, don't go to court. Like going to court is really expensive. It's a long process. Things move slowly. It takes time, costs a lot of money. So most of what you're doing is preparing for things, you know, drafting letters or emails or whatnot back and forth, you know. So being a good, you know, on your feet, being a good oral advocate is valuable. But I think often people think, oh, I'm going to be in court all the time. I'm going to be negotiating all the time. That's definitely not what it looks like at all, especially in your earlier years.
Let's talk about a little bit about the job now, because I know that now that we've been so many years out of high school, and heck, even when you talk to your friends, the common phrase that we always hear is, oh, I wish I learned this in school, or I wish I knew this in school. I wish someone told me about this when I was thinking about pursuing this career path. So using that theme today, I want to talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly of pursuing a career in law. So let's start with the good stuff, right? Were there any preconceived notions, positive preconceived notions that you had going in to law thinking, you know what, this is what I think law is? And did any of those things end up becoming true?
So it's funny. So I was doing this dual degree at Ivy. So I did my first year at Ivy, and then I had written my LSAT. And I was sort of figuring out, okay, I don't want these business jobs. I'm going to apply for law school. And through the dual degree program, you actually didn't have to do the main application. Because Ivy had pre-screened us for extracurriculars and all that kind of stuff, I just had to get a good enough score on my LSAT and get good enough grades in Ivy, which I did. And so I got accepted to law school, and I really hadn't thought about it much. Like most people, when they were applying, they have to do these personal statements and all these things. So I remember I was working a summer job. I think we actually both worked at Kraft a year apart. I worked in brand management after my first year of business school. And I remember like a week or two before law school was about to start, I went, I guess I should figure out like what the heck happens in law school. So, I mean, I remember looking at the courses I was going to be taking and going, you know, what are these? Like constitutional law, torts, what the heck's a tort? You know, all these things. So all that to say is my level of preparation for understanding what being a lawyer was like or law school was pretty low. And obviously I wouldn't recommend that, but that was just the reality. I didn't have any lawyers in my family, didn't really know anyone who was a lawyer. So, you know, I really had no sense of what it was going to be like. But what I would highly encourage people to do is talk to people. Like if you think you want to go into law, reach out to a law student, right? Like first year law student, second year, they're most likely happy to chat, you know. Reach out to maybe a first or second year lawyer at a firm. You don't need to reach out to someone really senior, but I think it's good to get a sense of both what the journey looks like and also what it's like once you get there, you know, and start working, and really to do both of them, because there are people that love law school and hate being a lawyer and vice versa. But the job itself, you know, I think the notions people have is, or maybe they do, is lawyers work a lot. That is generally true. That's probably not on the good side. But you get to help people. Like, you know, teachers do the same thing. I mean, it's a very different way of getting there, but you're working with people. I work with clients and I'm trying to help solve problems for them, right? Teachers are trying to help people solve problems too. They're trying to teach them and, you know, you're doing things like that. And that's what I get to do. So I wear my therapist hat or my social worker hat, just like teachers do. I wear my preparation hat, just like teachers do. And then I got to do stuff. I got to draft documents similar, I guess, to running a lesson. So really, I get paid to solve problems. And that's sort of cool when you think about it. And you can make quite a decent living. Not every lawyer, but plenty of lawyers are getting paid relatively well. You're helping people and you are making a difference at key points in people's lives. So those are, you know, some really positive things. We'll talk more maybe about some of the drawbacks after. And obviously, you know, the public's perception of lawyers isn't always the greatest. So I think I came in with that. But when you're good at what you do and when you help people in these situations, people really, really respect that. And that's definitely something that I don't take for granted.
Yeah, I think a lot of people going into law, those are the first things that comes to mind, right? You get to help people, you get paid really, really well. And those two things, you put those together, heck, that sounds like a fantastic career. So let's get into some of the bad stuff. And I know you sort of alluded to that. And you talked about the long hours, which I think most people are aware of. Most people know it's going to be a lot of work. It's challenging work. Again, that none of that stuff, I think, comes as a surprise. So what were some of the things that kind of surprised you? You're like, oh, man, I didn't realize that I had to do X, Y, Z. And now you're kind of dreading it.
Yeah. So I think, you know, there's a lot of younger lawyers that don't necessarily love what they do. And I don't dissuade people from going to law. I like law. I like being a lawyer. I think it takes time to get there and to figure out what it is. And the profession is definitely changing slowly, but the profession as a whole is really broken and very backwards looking. Generally, a lot of lawyers are not using technology anywhere to the degree they should be. There's a lot of manual work. There's a lot of bad processes. I was literally working on something right before we started recording, and it's a weekend when we're recording. So again, you know, I want to talk about hours as a lawyer. But stuff has to get done. And the way I'm drafting it, I'm automating as I draft. So I've got to do some work. I've got a great process that I've got from scratch that I'm starting with, or not from scratch, that I built previously as my starting point. And I'm working on this transaction now where I don't know what a lot of the variables we call it are. Stuff is changing behind the scenes. and we got to close this deal next week. And the way the average lawyer drafts that document is with a lot of blank lines and a lot of nonsense. And once they know, they have to manually go in and edit all these documents, and they're not going to know what date the thing's going to close. So once we're done, they're going to manually go in and do that too. And let's just say the way I'm doing this is a whole lot different. So you can imagine as soon as I know what the answer is, I press one button, it auto-updates all my documents. So it's not rocket science. This isn't, you know, revolutionary technology, but stuff like Google Docs, lawyers don't know how to use this. Lawyers do everything by email, which I know, you know, the people you're teaching, Ron, email is not used by that generation.
Yeah.
And just really, really bad tech skills overall, and just not thinking about process, because lawyers traditionally, and the vast majority of legal work is still done this way, bill by the hour. And when you think about that, what you have is an incentive problem, where the more hours I spend doing something, the more, in theory, I get paid until I piss off the client too much. And so previously, clients just paid bills. You know, 20, 30 years ago, somehow people got away with this. There's a lot more pressure now on lawyers to be efficient to some extent. But you have most lawyers not having thought about these things, and they're so busy partly doing things inefficiently that they don't have the time to learn how to do stuff more efficiently. So a lot of the stuff that just really surprised me when I was starting out as a younger lawyer was just how the work got done. Like, how did the sausage get made? You've got all these brilliant, brilliant people, but they don't have any of these skills. They didn't go to business school or whatever. They did, for example, a poli-sci degree. They became a lawyer. They worked at a law firm their whole life. You have a collection of people that don't have the skills to solve these problems or do these things or to realize, hey, you know, we could write a, you know, Python script. Someone, I don't need to know how to do that. I just need to know there's someone who should be able to solve this problem more efficiently. And what you get is the average person in the public who can't afford a lawyer, right? I can barely afford my own services, right? And so this is where part of the bad reputation comes in. When you're charging a lot of money and people don't feel like they're getting value, that's not good. And what it leads to is also a lot of overwork for younger lawyers often, because there's a lot of work to do in the first place. And you can imagine if you're not using good technology, good processes, there's a lot of manual work that should be automated. The really exciting stuff is, though, that there's so much new technology, not just normal technology, but technology specifically for lawyers that's come out into the market the last 5-6 years. And if you're tech savvy, you're interested in doing stuff better, you're going to be able to attract all these clients because, hey, you're able to provide better value without sacrificing anything. And you can also be happier because less grunt work. Like, nobody wants to spend, you know, 14 hours a day manually doing stuff that is so easy to automate. So that's one of the big things for sure.
Now, going on to what you're saying there, I think from my understanding from some of our offline conversations, this is actually one of the main reasons why you co-founded this brand new business for L Academy, is to teach these new lawyers some more modern skills. And you've been very vocal online on LinkedIn about, you know, how junior lawyers, a lot of the stuff that they're learning in law school doesn't necessarily translate into what actually happens in an actual law firm. So you talked about technology as being one of them and being kind of a little bit more, you know, living in the dinosaur ages. What are some other skills that you think lawyers are lacking or perhaps aren't trained properly in the early ages, and what are some of the skills that law firms are looking for?
Yeah. So, I mean, we could spend 400 hours talking about what training they're not getting. So let's start with what training they are getting. Law school. So, you know, I did Ivy with you. You're ahead of me, but same school. And Ivy is case-based, which in hindsight, I appreciate so much more. It's a great way to teach. It's not lecture style. So I did my first year at Ivy, and then I did my first year of law school, this weird dual degree. And then I did half of each sort of my last 2 years. And wow, going to law school, oh man, that was boring in terms of the way it was taught. We were back to lecture style and, you know, stuff that could have been summarized and so much faster. And so what I learned in law school was what they call black letter law, which is here are certain rules. You know, here are the elements of a contract and here's all different categories of things. But I never once looked at a contract, which makes no sense. I spend all day, every day dealing with contracts in some form. I never actually looked at one in 3 years of law school, which cost, you know, a lot of money as well. So there's a focus on that. At Ivy, the teachers, the professors were people who had been out there doing the work. Many of them were still consultants in real life and doing this stuff. At law school, you've got people that maybe worked as a lawyer for a year, had no interest in that, or academic oriented, and that's it. They've never done this stuff in real life. They have no idea what it's actually like to be a lawyer, nor do they have any, on average, any of those modern skills. Again, I'm generalizing, but that's sort of the norm. And then in law school, all you learn is law. There's maybe one negotiation course. There's a couple schools that have added some interesting courses that are great. But basically, you're learning law. You are not learning sales. You're not learning marketing. You're not doing anything in teams, pretty much. You're not learning leadership skills. You're not learning, you know, practical skills to be a lawyer. So you come out with a pretty narrow set of knowledge. And if anything, it prepares you better to be a litigator, the kind of person that works when one person is suing another person. As a corporate lawyer, didn't get much out of it. And you start on the job and you have no idea what you're doing. Again, there are a couple schools out there. So, for example, Lincoln Alexander, which is the new Ryerson Law School, they operate a lot more like Ivy, way more practical. You deal with contracts, you deal with this stuff. Like, and I do some work with them and they're fantastic. And there's other schools moving more towards that model. University of Calgary does some great stuff. Lakehead does some stuff like that. But by and large, lawyers or law students are graduating law school completely unprepared to work. And they get into a law firm where they're expected to be pretty close to perfect, where there's a lot of stuff on their plate, where they're charging a bunch of money, and they don't have a clue what they're doing. And that's the biggest challenge, right? I need somebody as a lawyer to do the work, but they've never seen a contract. They've never seen these documents. They don't understand why they're being asked to do things. They don't understand the elements of those things. And they're generally just scared and afraid to ask. And so you have this enormous pressure cooker where, of course, it's going to lead to anxiety and not so great mental health. Because if you don't know what you're doing, you're expected to do a great job of it. That's hard. And so with 4L Academy, what we're trying to do is basically say, okay, what should law school have looked like? What should training at law firms look like? Let's teach that stuff and also integrate some of the legal tech, but in a really fun and engaging and interactive way using modern pedagogy. So pretty much the opposite of law school is what we're doing. And we can talk more about that. But for anyone listening, there's a couple models as well. One's called the T-shaped lawyer and one's called the Delta model. And the T-shaped lawyer is basically the vertical line going up is your substantive law skills. So, you know, you talk about what should younger lawyers know or modern lawyers, substantive law, but the line across the top is, you know, your design thinking, you know, your data analytics, all these things that at the end of the day, a really good modern lawyer will know. Pretty much nothing at the top of the T is taught in any law school, maybe one or two at most. And that's where we are today.
Now, I know high school students, relating back to high school teachers and high school students, they're obviously years and years away from going into law school, right? But starting at the ground level, what should high school teachers begin at least planting the seeds and begin developing in their students who are interested in going into a career in law? What skills need to be sharpened? Again, I'm just throwing out random things here like public speaking, writing, reading. Obviously, these are common skills here, but what are some things that really should be developed at a young age?
I think there's a couple things. So I think writing is an extremely valuable skill in any profession. Business is the same idea. And I think in business school, you learn to write better. In law school, you learn to write even better, more concise, to the points, all that sort of stuff. And as a lawyer, your words really matter. You know, we analyze words and, you know, it's sort of a different way of writing completely than you would often learn in high school. You know, often in high school, you're writing English papers, they're flowery, you're using all these unnecessary adjectives. Law, it's, you know, you don't use synonyms when the same word would suffice. Because if you use a synonym, well, did you mean something different? You said house here and then you said home here. Was that on purpose or not? You know, that's the kind of thing people can debate. And it may seem like semantics, but it actually helps you become a much better writer, but very different style of writing than your traditional sort of English paper. But I think writing in general, being able to clearly articulate points to people is a valuable skill for any job. And lawyers do a lot of written communication and then a lot of oral communication. So the writing for sure. Public speaking, I don't think you need to be the world's greatest public speaker. If you're going to be a litigator going to court, eventually you got to be comfortable on your feet. But I think a much more valuable thing is being able to, again, clearly communicate things orally, right? So I spend a lot of time talking to clients. I spend a lot of time talking to potential clients. I spend a lot of time talking to lawyers on the other side of the files I'm working on. So, you know, there's the speaking part, but there's also the empathy. All these little sort of soft skills, you know, becoming a well-rounded person who can connect with people is really helpful. Most lawyers over time, if you stay at a firm, you become a salesperson. Because part of your job eventually is to bring in business and you get paid more the more clients you have. So sales is the kind of thing that is definitely not taught in law schools. It's barely taught in business schools. That's a valuable skill. The other stuff, I think, you know, at the end of the day is really just the way you think, like logical reasoning, things like that. And working through sort of, you know, those kind of things. Like when you write the LSAT, there's a logic game section and things like that. So really, you know, if you're a teacher, I think it's questioning stuff, you know, just memorizing law and regurgitating that on a test isn't going to get you far. I mean, you're going to learn that in law school, but let's be honest, the internet exists. You've got notes, you know, real life, you don't have to have all that memorized. But the way you can think about stuff and critically reason, which I think is such a valuable skill in general. I mean, look at the pandemic, look at all the media, and people need to parse through what's out there. And some people are doing a great job and some people have really fallen down a rabbit hole. And that's an inability to, I think, critically reason and deal with, you know, competing thoughts. So those are all really valuable skills as a lawyer for sure.
Oh, don't get me started with critical thinking. I think that's such an underdeveloped skill at the young age, especially at the high school level. I find that a lot of high school students, they're trained to memorize and regurgitate. And students, they want to be rewarded for that. They think that if I put in X amount of time, I should get X grade. And then when they're challenged or they're told that their critical thinking is incorrect or perhaps on the wrong path, it's almost like they've never tasted defeat before. And I know right now, heck, I won't get into this too much, but I know right now grades, is just so much pressure on students trying to get high grades to get into university, to eventually get into law school, that there's a whole nother problem. But anyways, I'm diverting now at this point. But I want to talk about mental health, which is a huge part of what we're talking about at the high school level, which is fantastic because it was never a topic that was even mentioned in our high school. I don't know about yours, but you mentioned mental health being a problem in the field of law where young lawyers are required to do high level of work, where they're billing a lot. And sometimes these lawyers, they're not trained to do X, Y, Z. Can you maybe elaborate a little bit more about some of the mental health challenges that lawyers are facing and what is the field of law doing to try to better and remedy that situation?
So the good news is, I think, you know, anyone who's in high school right now, by the time you are a lawyer, if you go down that path, this profession is going to look a lot different. There's a lot of Gen Z and a lot of millennial lawyers that are really passionate about this stuff and not afraid to speak up about it. The biggest challenge the profession has is, one, it's ignored mental health forever. Lawyers, you got a lot of type A's, but just not a culture in general of admitting imperfections, admitting failure. So you can imagine, you know, mental health is not something that has been front of mind for a while. It's getting better in terms of people talking about it, but most things that are being done are band-aid solutions. If anything, they're addressing symptoms and they're putting the blame on you as the individual, not on the system, right? Do some yoga, meditate more. Look, that's all good stuff, but that's not the answer. And law's biggest challenge right now goes back to this profession being broken. There's a systemic problem in the legal industry that is driving the mental health crisis. A bunch of it, and a lot of it, starts at the top with the leadership of a lot of law firms. In some cases, well-intentioned but poorly executing, but a lot of ignorance in some cases, or the inability to put the right incentives in place. So law firms have clung on to people with large books of business. Those people have the power at firms, and they can get away often with quite a lot of behavior that shouldn't happen. It's a culture that rewards billing hours. The more you bill, your bonus almost entirely tied to how many hours you built, and then tied to bringing in work. People who do the right stuff, do all the little things behind the scene, don't get rewarded. In fact, they're going to be told, you need to work more hours, Ron. If you want to make partner, you know, you got to step it up. And so you can have people fighting over different things, but you have a culture where no one is incentivized to focus on these things. Everything that's not billable is treated as optional in a lot of cases, and it's deprioritized. And you don't have managers in place. Most of the managers at law firms are lawyers who, remember we talked about what they learned in law school? Whole lot of nothing about that. And in fact, at a lot of law firms, every single person, for some reason, is a former lawyer, if they're not a lawyer. The head of HR, the head of, you know, all these things. You're like, I'm not sure what part about being a lawyer gave you these skills. In fact, it was probably the opposite. You know, I'd rather hire someone, I can teach someone the law they need to know. You don't need to be a lawyer to do HR or to be the head of recruiting. And the challenge is, well, there's a lot more well-intentioned people now. When it comes to who makes the real decisions and getting firms to put their money where their mouth is, you've got a lot of high level, you know, shouting from the rooftops, we care about this, we care about this, but not backing it up with action. So still tying everything to hours, rewarding people for working so many hours instead of saying, hey, the fact you work this many hours we've got to do a better job. That's actually a bad thing, not a good thing. Like if you work that many hours, your mental health cannot possibly be good. So you really just have systemically an issue. It's got to start from the top along with bottom up pressure. But really that's what we're dealing with. There's a big disconnect, I think, between the reality on the ground and how younger lawyers are feeling versus the perception from people at the top. And a lot of law firms think, well, just throw more money at people. Money is the problem. And I mean, I think anyone in high school listening knows, mental health, feeling passionate about what you're doing, all that sort of stuff. Money is not the answer. And it's a generational shift. A lot of lawyers 25 years ago, they stayed for the money. And I think these days you see a lot more people leaving after a couple of years to work fewer hours and do something they're more passionate about because the money's not going to keep them there. It's not enough, as we all know. You shouldn't be running your life to make as much money as possible. You're going to be rich, but you're going to be miserable. So
now you talk about mental health, and I'm curious to hear a little bit about your story. Now, I read in a recent Toronto Life article that, I didn't know this, you were actually battling cancer in your first year as a lawyer, and now you're in remission. Am I correct? Congratulations. That's amazing. And you talked about how you were forcing yourself to make mental health a priority, or else you in fear that that could eventually affect your physical health. Can you maybe just share a snippet of your story about that time of your life and the struggles that you were going through battling cancer, but also going into this new profession? How did that impact the way you viewed life?
So I'm going to partly answer your question, but partly punt it a little bit, but in a different way. So the cancer part's a little bit misleading. Like I did have cancer. I was lucky. It was not, of all the types you can have, it was as good as it gets. So didn't have to suffer the way so many people who have that did. But I think what's most important is to talk about maybe where I was in my third or fourth year as a lawyer on the mental health side, because that's really important.
Right.
So, I didn't grow up talking much about mental health at all. And then, went to law school where no one was talking about this, went to a law firm where no one was talking about this. And it is amazing to think about how much the general societal conversation has shifted, but in my third or fourth year as a lawyer, I started getting really, really anxious, and I didn't have the words or the tools or the skill set or any of that to deal with it. In hindsight, you look back and realize, okay, I've had anxiety for a while, but it really just got triggered, I guess, a lot more during that time. And what had happened is, as you move up the ranks as a lawyer, you start getting more and more responsibility. So, being a lawyer is not a job for somebody who wants to do the same thing every day. You get good at something, which takes time. You move on to the next thing. That's how you learn and you grow. And that keeps things interesting. But eventually I was moving up to a point where people wanted me running my own files. So a lot of the work I do, for example, is helping people buy and sell companies. So M&A or mergers and acquisitions. And in my first couple of years, you're doing what we call ancillary documents, like these little things that are involved in a transaction, but like they're not the meat of the transaction. And you're also involved in a part at the beginning called due diligence, where you're diligencing, you're trying to learn more about the company you're buying. Like, let's say you're going to buy a Lamborghini. Well, when you open up the hood, what's actually in there? Is it a Lamborghini or have things been moved around where it looks like a Lamborghini, but that's not going to, operate like one. And so in your first couple of years, you're very much directed by other people. You're doing work that, quite frankly, probably should be automated at this point in time. But suddenly I'm supposed to be running my own files, and clients are reaching out to me directly and saying, hey, Aaron, what do we normally do in this case? And I'm going like, I don't have a clue. I don't know what I'm doing. No one trained me on this. And I have, I've been getting good reviews this whole time, but no one was really realizing what the skills I needed were to be a good lawyer. And so I had a massive knowledge gap. And so, again, imagine now not just people at your firm expecting to know what you're doing, but clients expecting you to know what you're doing. You need to pretend you know what you're doing, but you also don't want to provide bad advice because you can't take back some of this stuff. Like once that contract's signed and there's a third party signing the other thing, they're not going to say, oh, sorry, my lawyer didn't know what we were doing. Can we please, rescind that contract? Like that doesn't happen, right? So you've got to be thinking about all these things because they can't all be taken back. And that's stressful and anxiety inducing when you have no faith in yourself to actually know what to look for or what you're doing. And so I sort of reached a point where I said to myself, okay, like, do I leave law now? Or do I stay and try to persevere? And I decided to go the perseverance route plus the, working on the mental health side on my own. And what I had to do was teach myself a lot of substantive law. I spent hundreds and hundreds of hours on my own time learning and reading and then asking some really great mentors questions. And came out of that process going, holy crap, why did no one just teach this to me this way in the first place? Like now that I had this mental map in place, I understood what I was doing But more importantly, I understood why I was doing it. And with the 4L Academy classes, like that's what we focus on. Like, we'll teach you what to do. We'll teach you, most importantly, why you're doing it. And then we'll teach you how to do it in a modern, efficient way. That's what you need to be, you know, a good lawyer. And, you know, we talk so much about mental health or the issues in the legal profession. And the question is always why? Why do lawyers on average have worse, insert every bad thing, alcoholism, depression, divorce, suicide, all the bad stuff, higher rates? It actually starts in law school. They've shown that when people enter law school, they enter sort of normal levels of, I guess, mental health issues, and then it gets worse in law school. And then it gets, I think, even worse in the profession. But one of the things I think that has not been talked about enough as a cause of part of the mental health stuff is the substantive knowledge side. Again, if you don't know what you're doing and you're being asked to do it and you've got all these pressures, of course it's not good for your mental health. And so my thought was, you know, can we run these courses, which we're doing for law students and for lawyers, not just in a way to teach them stuff for the sake of learning, but really as a mental health play? And really that's what we're doing, is we're trying to solve the or make a difference on the mental health side through giving them the knowledge and the skills to do these things. It's not going to solve the issues, because there's a lot more mental health reasons, but it's going to solve part of the issues at least. And we're really, really excited about that.
Aaron, I'm looking at the time. I think we need to wrap up. So to summarize our conversation, for high school students and teachers that are listening to this podcast who are interested in pursuing law or are teaching law, I want you to complete this sentence. I wish I knew in high school blank.
I wish I knew in high school what lawyers do on a day-to-day basis.
Aaron, where can students and teachers find you and your business, and even student lawyers? Where can they find your business and you on social media?
Yeah, so our website is 4LAcademy.ca. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. So Aaron, A-A-R-O-N, and then B-A-E-R. You can find 4L Academy there, on Instagram, on Twitter, not on TikTok yet, but I guess that will come. And if you're looking to reach out to law students or younger lawyers to learn more about what they do, LinkedIn's a great place to start. I'd start there, find some people, connect with them, and reach out. Most people are happy to chat.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Aaron, for hopping in on this podcast. Hopefully we can grab a drink sometime soon once all this restrictions and lockdown stuff all ends. But I appreciate you coming in today and chatting with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Ron. This was a pleasure.
And thank you to all our listeners again for tuning in to another episode of the Teacher Hotline. If you enjoy this content, feel free to follow us on Instagram and on Facebook. And of course, don't forget to click that subscribe button on Apple, Spotify, Google, and every other streaming podcast. We'll see you guys next Monday. Take care.